Welcome to Double Take, critical, sometimes confrontational conversations about movies. Double Take is a Cinema Classics production hosted by Johnny DiLoretto and John DeSando. I'm John DeSando.
I'm Johnny DiLoretto. This is Double Take.
And this is a podcast.
Yeah. So we needed more room. to spread our wings and have, you know, longer conversations, John, because I can't get enough of talking
That's
to you about
right.
movies.
So let's go into one room, and okay. let's go into Rear Window.
Yeah, Rear Window, great. Obviously, Alfred Hitchcock classic, probably considered one of his masterworks. You know,
yes.
people have conversations about what his masterworks
best, right.
are. You know, some of the more horror-leaning people say Psycho.
Yes.
Other people, the more cerebral cineasts say Vertigo.
Right.
Some of the more blockbustery, sort of fun people lean on North by Northwest.
Nice. Good
but
choices.
Rear Window has its, you know, its backers.
It has its place. It's so confined of an area. Even though it was the largest set ever made for the studio, it still is a confined area. His window looking out into the courtyard mm-hmm. and to the other apartments.
What a perfect movie for our shutdown pandemic times, right?
Oh, great.
Where everybody's confined to their own spaces. Movie theaters are closed.
Yeah.
We have
some traditional Hitchcock tropes here.
Yeah, lay them out for me.
The first one would be the debilitated guy. Mm-hmm. Frequently, it's a guy who's misunderstood. Frequently, it's a guy who is being chased by authorities or whatever.
Right, and always in Hitchcock's films, you have a guy who's like a regular guy,
yes.
right? Who gets sucked into some sort of crazy circumstances
yes.
that really tests his mettle.
That's right.
And then you learn about, oftentimes, you know, in Hitchcock movies, it's about their moral mettle, their ethical mettle.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. And I think North by Northwest is my best other example of that.
Okay.
Where Cary Grant gets sucked into a world he knows nothing about.
Definitive.
A matter of identity. Mm-hmm. And all this is really, truly for the Jimmy Stewart character. Who is he? How does he relate to this most gorgeous of women who comes from the outside, intrudes on his little world, another home invasion of a different sort?
Yeah, right.
And, how does he respond? And here she is, she's so giving to him, and he's so reluctant because he's such a voyeur.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to watch.
Right, and that's about the only clue we're given as to who L.B. Jeffries is. We know he's a photojournalist.
Yes.
He's got this big camera.
Yes.
You know? He's got a cast on one leg, and then he has this telephoto lens that he could use as a crutch if he needed to. It's so long.
This is what I love about Hitchcock.
Right.
He has his phallic symbol ready there
exactly.
for you.
Exactly. It's right there up front. But also, it provides the glimpse into who this guy is as a character, right? I think the only evidence we're given as to how he broke his leg are the photographs of the race car.
Good one. Yeah.
Competition he was
yeah.
at. Something went wrong there. He was hit by something, right? But we see that it's great Hitchcockian narrative efficiency. He doesn't want to take us out of that space. He doesn't want to have to take us out story-wise into what happened. We just kind of get a little tip of the iceberg of information there in those photos.
Yeah, and so much of this is about intrusion. One of the things I love about Hitchcock, he has so many attitudes that he brings in, like his obsession with blondes,
mm-hmm.
his handsome leading men. The two best examples being Jimmy Stewart and Cary Grant, who
yeah.
are completely the opposite of him.
Exactly, right. And in some ways, opposite each other.
Yes, you know? We're good, yeah.
You know, Jimmy Stewart has that that down-home sort of Americana feel about him, although that certainly never limited him. I think Jimmy Stewart got the most mileage out of always playing off of that, throwing darker shadows against that wall.
And, you know, Hitch is, we know that he appears here in Rear Window. Do you remember where he appears?
It has to be like in a newspaper.
No,
he's walking across.
Where is he? Rarely I ever can top you for memory.
Okay.
And this is when he's in, I think, Ross Bogdazarian's apartment and changing the clock.
Oh.
So he's up there changing, I think it's a grandfather's clock.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, what Hitchcock brings, he's so unassuming as a physical character, but he's got so much going on in his mind. The choice of Raymond Burr for Lars Torvald.
Thanks for treating us all to the proper Nordic pronunciation. I mean, even in the movie, they say Thorwald.
Oh, that's typical of me.
Yeah, I know.
That's why you're so
good. You're going to try to teach Hitchcock a posthumous lesson.
No, right. Because he looks so much like David O. Selznick, producer whom Hitchcock just did not like because he was so intrusive.
Mm-hmm.
And so Hitch brings in these little parts of himself to the movie that I just simply love.
Yeah.
You're talking about him, Stuart, just watching. We do have some dicey stuff going on, not the least of which is a dog.
Right.
It dies. You don't kill a dog in a movie.
It's so great because nowadays, no dog ever meets its maker.
No.
Because, God forbid, because the audience can't handle that. It even happens, even today, it's funny, like, it always happens off screen. You'll hear a dog yelp, and then maybe you'll see it again later. You're right. All kinds of interesting things going on back there. And things that still resonate today. Miss Lonely Hearts, who is suffering a major bout of depression. And on the verge of suicide.
She's wearing a green outfit that relates to the green outfit.
That's right.
That
Grace Kelly is
Grace Kelly mm-hmm. brings in here. And I love how he integrates so quietly, Hitchcock. He's just so unobtrusive, but he's there. That's who he is.
Yeah.
He intrudes on Lars. There's one point where Hitchcock says he kind of hopes that we might like him. As a character, this guy's a murderer.
Yeah, right.
and yet.
And he's also, like, it's interesting that Raymond Burr would later go on to play Perry Mason.
Oh, good.
Because here, he's aged. They have him in makeup to make him look older.
Right, right.
He doesn't look anything like the sort of slick attorney of Perry Mason. He looks like your typical grumpy 50-something guy who's trapped in a marriage. Yes. That's the other beauty part of this movie is we don't get a whole lot of information about that relationship with his wife, what would have driven him. Again, it's Hitchcock playing with this meta-cinematic concept of watching, of seeing.
Yeah.
We'll talk a little bit later about the implications of that.
Yes.
But here, very clearly, is a guy who's in love with movies, in love with movie making, and he's found this perfect metaphor for the kind of things that we see when we go to the movies, the kind of how a little bit of a story, the iceberg tip of a story informs, allows you to build and imagine what lies under the little bits of information that we're getting, right?
Yeah.
You're listening to Double Take, critical, sometimes confrontational conversations about movies. I'm Johnny DiLoretto.
I'm John DeSando.
There's so much to talk about with Rear Window, but let's pivot a little bit and talk about Hitchcock's career. If you were going to do a double feature, if you were going to suggest a double feature to somebody, Rear Window being one of the films, if you wanted to suggest to somebody something that would give them a broad scope of what this guy was about, what would your other movie be?
Well, for similarities and differences, I don't think there's anything better than North by Northwest to juxtapose with Rear Window.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to national monuments. You have this very urbane leading character.
Yeah.
And quite different from our disabled Jimmy Stewart. I like the difference between the two, and yet both of them are troubled men.
Yeah.
In one way, they're into troubling circumstances,
right,
as the Cary Grant. Hitch confines us in Rear Window, mm-hmm, and he expands us in North by Northwest.
Yeah, there's so many of them like that, that, you know, those two examples you gave are probably the pinnacle of that concept of the ordinary man in extraordinary circumstances.
Yes, yes.
He'd done it so many times before. Foreign Correspondent, The Wrong Man, etc. For me, if I was going to impress upon people how talented this guy was and how different he could be, Psycho.
Good one.
I think a lot of people, I'm guessing contemporary audiences, may think that Psycho is an older film because it's in black and white.
Ah.
It's not. That came a little bit later. That came about 6 years or so after Rear Window. He deliberately shot it in black and white for aesthetic reasons. But stylistically, it's so different.
Yeah.
Stylistically, it is less formal or would you say more formal? I don't know. It doesn't have the sort of panache that Rear Window has. I know we think a lot about the how influential the shower scene was and the editing there. But for the most part, his camera is really calm.
And his protagonist is completely different.
Right.
You know, you've got the blonde woman, an obsession of Hitchcock's.
Exactly. But who parts ways with us about 45 minutes into the movie,
yes, yeah.
which was unheard of at the time.
Yeah. And we could look at the birds for another woman a centerpiece.
Right. True. Yeah. Switching on that. Yeah. The protagonist.
Yes.
Angle there. But Psycho is such a weird movie, right? And it shifts its focus from Janet Leigh to Anthony Perkins in what is just a really strange, troubled performance. And to shift our focus there and to put our... to enlist our sympathies for the murderer is a really fascinating strategy. And the way he does it is so great. One of my favorite shots, I think we've talked about this before, is when he's trying to get rid of a body, puts it in the car, pushes the car into the lake.
Yes.
And then it stops. The car gets stuck. And now he thinks he's in deep trouble. And when the car slowly starts to submerge again, you see this little smile creep over Anthony Perkins' face. We're rooting for the car to sink because, you know, I guess when that's the beauty part of movies, when you're watching a movie, your sympathies are enlisted with the protagonist and you can think about things and think about doing things that you might not otherwise ever do in real life.
Yep, yep. These are things that people know who have been watching for decades.
Yeah.
What possible reference does it have contemporary wise? You know, why isn't this thing just antiquated and don't look at it again?
Well, we talked about voyeurism early on, right? And how that was at the time, I think, at least in Hitchcock's mind while he was making it, was a metaphor for movie watching.
Sure.
Today, it takes on a different aspect, maybe one of surveillance.
Sure.
A movie that came out recently, it's available to stream right now, directed by Dave Franco, The Rental.
Great choice.
The dangers of millennials just willy-nilly giving themselves over to this Airbnb app where they walk into a stranger's home and, you know, live their lives in there. And the premise of The Rental is that these millennials go and they rent this Airbnb and they don't know that there's all kind of little tiny cameras put everywhere.
Even in the shower head.
Even
in the
shower head.
As a direct reference to Hitchcock.
Exactly.
And so, yes. we're going to have some of the ideas from Hitchcock are going to be, Franco is going to take the feel, the slow pacing, the incremental exposition.
Yeah.
Waiting to the whole film, like Psycho.
Yeah.
Till we can finally find the slasher.
Well, there are these low angle shots, right, of that house up on the hill.
Yeah.
Are very much like, you know, the house in Psycho.
Sure.
Also, another Hitchcock nod might be that so much of the action takes place on the cliffs.
Yes.
You know, with the water below.
Yes.
Reference to North by Northwest.
And even the lodge in North by Northwest, similar to the lodge-looking place in Rental.
Right.
So we got to call this guy Franco and tell him he's going to be in jail for stealing from our
plagiarism.
Buddy.
And
I wanted to add to what you were saying about the surveillance. Because there was nothing digital at the time that Rear Window was made, there wouldn't have been conscious about how present the digital atmosphere is in all of our lives. And we now associate it more with government than almost anything else. Mm-hmm. How is the government intruding? How are big tech, are they intruding? And what are they saving about us? Not even ideas that Hitchcock will even know.
I wonder, it is still so very contemporary. I mean, we do this all the time. I wonder what role social media would have played in an updating of Rear Window.
Oh, yes.
You know, would L.B. Jeffries be uploading these images or making videos of what these people were. I could see that where maybe he was piecing together their stories online in some way.
Yeah.
You know, uploading these videos to YouTube, doing a murder investigation live as it's happening on social media.
Even in the case of the so well-known Hitchcock blonde, in Rear Window, the Grace Kelly character probably wouldn't even exist today.
Hmm.
A fashionista, She's serving L.B. Jeffries.
Mm-hmm.
She is going to be the object, supposedly.
Oh, I could his... no, I could totally see her existing, but as an Instagram influencer. She's a fitness model. I mean, it's clearly a easily plugged into contemporary.
I see her as closer to Atomic Blondes today, in a way that women have evolved in films. Is it not a way that you would have thought Hitchcock would, except, yeah, as we said, for The Birds, for instance.
Yeah.
For some of these, where, and even in Psycho, where he has a prominent blonde, and both blondes, however, are vulnerable for Hitchcock.
Yeah.
Most of his women are vulnerable, right?
I don't know. Is Tippi Hedren in The Birds vulnerable?
Yeah, well, sure. She's being attacked.
Well, everybody is being attacked there.
Yeah. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, but anyway, I see the women as different. That's where, as you were talking about, you know, where does Hitchcock fit today? Well, his heroine is going to be quite a bit different today than it was then.
Let's say somebody isn't into Hitchcock. Let's say this is not their bag. Who's an opposite filmmaker? Who's the antithesis of Hitchcock?
One of our subjects, Christopher Nolan, is much more demanding intellectually than Hitch is. However, we've spent a considerable amount of time here deconstructing Hitch and finding a whole bunch of intelligent connections.
For sure. I can see people who are trying to explore classic films maybe not liking it or not getting into it. If that's the case, I think the opposite guy, the opposite direction would be Cassavetes.
Oh, that's a great choice.
Low down Super and dirty filmmaking, you know, improvisational. Scenes that go on and on.
Right.
Right.
I remember Hitchcock is the great example of storyboarding.
Mm-hmm.
He could go away on vacation after he's and let somebody else film that.
Okay.
Because every shot.
Because it was all plotted out, right?
So the opposite
Cassavetes
of what
is just like about finding it as they're going along. Anyway.
Yes.
Hitchcock, Cassavetes, Rear Window, The Rental. So many different. You can explore almost the entire history of cinema by exploring the works of Hitchcock.
So there's more than one double take in anything that we do.
That's right. If you're interested in supporting this endeavor, please reach out to me at johnnyd@wcbe.org. That's johnnyd@wcbe.org. And that's it